I'm Jenna Fisher.
And I'm Angela Kinsey.
And we have the podcast Office Ladies. Every Wednesday, we'll be sharing even more exclusive stories and lots of laughs.
Follow and listen to Office Ladies on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
News, traffic, and the latest on the Redbirds. This is the Redbird Rush Hour on KMOX.
Sponsored by Busey Bank. Building community with Busey Bank. Beyond the game.
On a newsy Friday afternoon, we welcome you in to the Redbird Rush Hour right here on KMOX. Kevin Wheeler's got the night off alongside of Bernie Miklas. I'm Matt Pauly. We have you for the full 5 o'clock hour today, taking you till 6 o'clock right around the time we're going to get underway with our network coverage of Cardinals baseball. Bernie, it's always great to see you, always great to work with you. And man, yeah, do we have some news today, a double news shot over the last few moments. In the last hour, we learned J.J. Weatherholt signing an 8-year contract extension. And about 5 minutes ago, Major League Baseball confirmed that with Shohei Ohtani's injury and him stepping out of the All-Star game, that Cardinals DH Ivan Herrera has been selected for the All-Star game as he is joining Jordan Walker and Riley O'Brien as Cardinals representatives at the Midsummer Classic. So we got a lot to get to over the next hour.
Yeah, I mean, the Weatherholt news is so exciting. I mean, I felt I don't know how to explain it, man, without sounding like an idiot, but he is such an important player to not just the 26 Cardinals, but for their foreseeable future. To me, it's almost like signing him to a contract extension that keeps him in place through 2034. I know this sounds dramatic, but I mean it from the bottom of my heart. Today, to me, this is when the new era of Cardinals baseball began, because you have a foundational player in place for a long, long time, and it's exciting.
I remember driving one afternoon, Bernie, and you were on with the Glover Show, and it was around the time that Connor Griffin had signed his deal with the Pirates, and that kind of picked up people talking about this once again. And to paraphrase you, you said, "I don't care how much money it takes. You sign J.J. Weatherholt, blank check, whatever the value is going to be, you make it happen. This guy is this important." So I think you'll stand by the fact that you did say those words a couple months ago. And here we are, and turns out they actually really didn't have to push themselves that hard. 8 years, $112 million. Now you're buying out his club control years where he'll make millions instead of hundreds of thousands, which is great for him. But taking a step back, I think this is one of the better values we've seen in these deals in Major League Baseball going to these pre-arb players.
Yeah, Matt. You know, and listen, I'm just going to go ahead and assume, you know, that he will hit those incentives in this contract that would increase the value to a maximum $132 million. So I wanted to put it that way for a reason. Even if he gets the max value of that contract, $132 million, I mean, we're talking about, what, like 16 point something dollars a year in terms of 16 million plus whatever, 16.4 million dollars a year in annual average value. Now, listen, I know that's a lot of money. I'm not saying it isn't. And I hate to use the word bargain, but because that implies that somehow, you know, J.J. Weatherholt settled for less, and J.J. Weatherholt's a really smart and a really mature and a really serious guy. He would only sign a deal like this if he actually believed it was in his best interest. But if you look at it really objectively, you know, this is a heck of a deal for the Cardinals. I mean, it's a win-win-win for everybody. But boy, the Cardinals, because you're right, Matt. I was thinking the cost of signing him would be higher than this. I didn't have a specific figure in mind, but you know what I mean.
Yeah, I was too. And look, I understand that by buying out pre-arbitration years and the arbitration years for that matter, you're able to get him in at a much lower number than just straight free agents. I'm not dumb. Right. I understand that. But when we do compare him to the highest paid second baseman, Jose Altuve makes $30 million a year. Marcus Semien makes $25 million a year. Ketel Marte makes about $20 million a year. I mean, these are guys, you put this contract up against those contracts and it looks pretty incredible.
It really does. It's an exceptional value. And listen, I know that some of our listeners, and that's okay, they don't like the fancy stuff, the, you know, wins above replacement and all that. But this guy right now is basically, in terms of his all-around values, well, for sure is the best second baseman in the National League all around. And he's right there, you know, in terms of being the most valuable second baseman in all of the majors. And he certainly, in the National League, is, as of now, knock on wood, he's going to be a runaway winner of the National League Rookie of the Year. And unless people have lost their minds, he should win not only a Gold Glove, but a Platinum Glove, because his defense is so top of the charts incredible. Like, it's not just good. I mean, we're talking, like, truly elite. And he's only been in the major leagues. He's only played, what, 87 regular season games? And he's already basically at the highest level you can get at his position in Major League Baseball. Wow, right?
Yeah, and a couple other things. We're going to spend some time on this because, I mean, I think there's so many different, like, tentacles to this. J.J. Weatherholt, I questioned whether or not this deal could get done simply because of Weatherholt's age. Because a lot of these other guys who get these deals, they're 18, 19, 20 years old. So if they sign an eight-year deal, they're coming out on the other side at age 28. They've still got their best years. They're right in the middle of their prime. With Weatherholt being a college guy, it was going to be tougher because if he ever wants to get that big-time payday, all of a sudden maybe you're talking about a six-year deal or a five-year deal. Well, then you're not buying out really any of the free agent years. All you're doing is buying out pre-ARB and ARB, and that's not right. There's no value in that. So he and his agent, and more, we'll talk about his agent a little more in a second. He and his agent, because he'll be 32 years old, Bernie, when this deal comes up. That's on the other side of prime, or right. That's right at the end of prime, right? Like that's a free agent contract at 28 is worth a heck of a lot more than a free agent contract at age 32. So by agreeing to an 8-year deal and going to age 32, J.J. Weatherholt just took a lot of money out of his back pocket.
Yeah, and even if like I believe he'll have earning power at age 32. Because he has so many different skills and he's so smart and he's one of these guys you know will adjust through time, through years, through experience and all that. But he'll have earning power at age 32. But the difference is, it's not going to be a 6 or 7 year contract. It may not even be a 5 year contract. It may be 3 years or something like that. Because, you know, frankly, we're seeing some contracts that are starting to curdle.
Yeah.
This year, Kyle Tucker. No, thank you. Not at that price. Alex Bregman. That contract looks like it's curdling a little bit, right? And he's roughly around that age. So, yeah, you're absolutely right. And I remember you saying that. I got to back you up. I remember very much you saying that and explaining that it's not as simple as it seems because, you know, he will not want to, like, lock himself into to the extent that he can't become a free agent when he's 27 or 28. No, you called that, and logically you were absolutely correct. That's why I was surprised by this. I'm not surprised that they made a deal with him. I was just surprised that it came together so quickly and that he obviously didn't have a problem with looking down the road and saying, well, I'll be 32 when this thing's up. Am I going to be able to get another big contract? He's obviously very confident in himself, which is cool.
The last thing, agents are around to look out for their players and to make sure that they make the best decisions. It always comes down to players to make the end decision, but agents are there to represent. There's so many people out there that I hear from on this show and on the post-game show that just still, for whatever reason, do not believe in the direction the Cardinals are going. When you are the representation for J.J. Weatherholt, if you're going to lock him in to an 8-year contract for all the reasons, Bernie, that we've already mentioned, what you as an agent have to have is a great belief in what the organization is doing that your client is going to be in a good spot. So I also think that this speaks volumes about what the industry thinks about what the Cardinals are currently doing under Hein Bloom, with the fact that the agent for J.J. Weatherholt would very much encourage this kind of deal.
There's no doubt about it. There's just absolutely no doubt about it. And I don't understand the people that think this direction's wrong. Have we not learned a dang thing about how this franchise went downhill and why they had to make such sweeping changes in the front office? There is a segment of the fan base that just will not be happy unless the Cardinals, like, literally are spending stupid money on players. The stuff that will set them back rather than take them forward. You can't really talk any sense into them. But for them to be able to pull this off, to your point, is a reflection on how they're viewed by J.J. Weatherholt and his agent, probably even his parents.
Yeah.
And I tell you another thing, and the Cardinals got such a tremendous value on this that I think it would make it more likely they'll be able to make a deal with Jordan Walker. And that's going to be up to Walker, of course. But this actually is economical from the extent they will have more money to work with, no matter how they choose to work with it. And I don't know why, you know, I would think people would see the value in that. I mean, maybe the money that they'll look at this is like, well, we can afford a free agent maybe after next season, or we can get a deal done with Walker or Mason Wynn or Alec Burles. You know, there's the fact that this is such a good contract in terms of that it's not going to choke off the Cardinals payroll for a long time, gives them flexibility to do more and to add more talent.
That's Bernie Miklas. I'm Matt Pauly. This is Redbird Rush Hour. We've got a lot more coming up. We're taking you until 6 o'clock tonight right here on your home for the Cardinals, KMOX. It's the Redbird Rush Hour right here on KMOX. That's Bernie Miklas. I'm Matt Pauly. We are with you till 6 o'clock this evening. The news, the two bits of news today, J.J. Weatherholt has been given an 8-year extension. It kicks in next year, and it takes him through 2034 now with the Cardinals, which is quite the extension for sure. Also, Yvonne Herrera has been named as an all-star replacement, so the Cardinals now have three players who will be representing the organization in the all-star game. Bernie, you touched on this a moment ago. Because you start to dream on what the Cardinals will look like, and now as you do that, you know that J.J. Weatherholt's right in the middle of it. Who else that's on the team right now are you very convicted in your belief that they also are part of the long term for the Cardinals?
I think it would start with Jordan Walker. There's a little bit of a leap of faith involved in that, because you're basically saying that you believe what he's been doing is for real, and he will sustain it. And I really do feel comfortable in my opinion on that. But I think it starts with Walker, and that also, I think, would mean that he would be the most expensive investment. But then, you know, you look at some other things. How do you feel about Mason Wynn? Especially when, you know, let's face it, the Cardinals have, granted, they're very, very young. They have a couple of really young shortstops in their system that seemingly have incredible talent. So would they be willing to invest in Mason Wynn at a high price? Maybe at a, you know, a value price. I don't know. And a lot of it has to do with Mason Wynn. You look at Alec Burleson, you know, and it's one of those things, because I feel like I'm being a bad guy if I like hesitate a little bit. I like him a lot, but I do wonder, you know, you look at his age and the fact that, you know, if you want to stop him from going to for free agency after 2027 or 2028, would he be willing to sign an extension for? That would be one of those where it's got to make sense for the Cardinals, and it's got to be something that would be he would approve of. So I other than that, I'm reluctant to talk about any pitching, because they'd better be careful about that, because pitchers break, number one, but also they have a bunch of them on the way, and then they're going to have to make some really tough decisions if they're going to invest in pitching within their franchise. they're going to have some, I think they're going to have a lot of tough choices to make about where that money goes. So you don't want to rush into anything there unless maybe you get a bargain deal with somebody.
Yeah, I like a lot of guys on this team. My conviction on who's going to be here in 2032 with J.J. Weatherholt, I have a hard time with that one. I'd love for it to be Jordan Walker, but also I think you need to remember the finance of this whole thing. Walker is done with his pre-arbitration year. So you get these opportunities to get signed guys under market value when you buy out the pre-arb years. Next year, Jordan Walker is eligible for arbitration. So he's going to go from making hundreds of thousands of dollars to millions upon millions of dollars. He is due for a huge raise next year with arbitration. So all of a sudden, trying to get him for an under market deal, I mean, arbitration isn't as much as he would make on the free agent market, but it's still, it is a significant pay increase that he's going to make. And if he were to go out as free agent next year, he might be able to make it $40+ million per year. I mean, that's the kind of numbers that he's putting up with what he's doing. So I would love for them to be in conversations with Jordan Walker. I just don't know what kind of opportunity would be there to get the under market deal with him.
A lot of it depends on him, and depends on his parents, depends on his agent. You know, that the player's got to, obviously, the final say on everything if there's some money offered. And I feel silly because I can't remember the first year that he would be eligible for free agency. Is it 2029? Is it 2028?
I can't remember. Next year is his first year of arbitration. You go through, so 2029 would be for his free agency year.
You know, he would have a chance to maybe kick start the big money a couple of years earlier, depending on what the Cardinals are willing to, like, put forward. But let's face it, the player that we see now, that's a player worth keeping. You know, and it'd be one thing if he was 27, 28, 29 years old. He's still 24. I mean, you know, I think that's an extra premium in terms of what you would have to pay to keep him. Because you're getting all the prime years, all of them.
All of them, yep.
Yeah.
Yep. And if he would have not had such a slow start to his big league career, maybe it would have been a different conversation 2 years ago. But so, right. And this is, okay, let's, real quick. Sure. This is why you don't rush players to the big leagues. Because you start right. The clock on them too soon.
That's right. Absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. In this case, it worked because Heim Bloom, and give him credit, I'm not going to explain this right. You can have my back and you'll explain it right. But Heim Bloom, he didn't want to fool around with, like, well, we'll keep him in Memphis for the first 6 weeks and then call him up. No, he was confident, first of all, that the guy was 100% ready not only to be in the major leagues, be a great player right away, but also Heim Bloom wants those draft picks. He said, listen, man, I think this guy's so good. There's a real good shot he'll win the Rookie of the Year. And, you know, he took a calculated gamble there, but he could have played it another way, in a way where, you know, they would have, in effect, pulled themselves out of any chance of you know, getting a draft pick if he wins Rookie of the Year. And it could have sort of, you know, it could have like not worked out this well. And like I said, at least I said it ahead of time, I'm having a hard time explaining my point here, but Heim Bloom played it perfectly. If you think about it, he played it perfectly because all of his instincts were correct.
They did not rush Weatherholt to the big leagues. They rushed Walker to the big leagues. That was the point that I was getting to.
No, that's right.
And,
that's right.
And for people who don't understand, when you get a Rookie of the Year on a guy that's been up since right at the beginning, teams are being incentivized to not manipulate contracts. So there's a draft pick compensation that goes along with, like, a Rookie of the Year and things like that. So that's what the Cardinals are going for. We will take a break. We will return coming up in just a moment. That's Bernie Miklas. I'm Matt Pauly. We have you till 6 o'clock. We will talk a little bit about the Avon Herrera news, and also we'll try to put a cap on what just happened over the last 4 days with the Cardinals lose. From a PR standpoint, what a fantastic time to name announce a J.J. Weatherholt extension after what the club went through over the last few days. That's good all point. Coming up as we roll on with the Redbird Rush Hour right here on KMOX. Back at it on the Redbird Rush Hour here on KMOX. That's Bernie Miklas. I'm Matt Pauly. We've got you for just under another 20 minutes, taking you to 6 o'clock, and then we'll get to Cardinals baseball after the 6 o'clock news. News of the day, J.J. Weatherholt has signed an 8-year extension. And then we can't really, there's not a whole lot to break down here, Bernie, but certainly worth a moment or so to just appreciate for him. Yvonne Herrera was named as an all-star replacement today for Shohei Ohtani. Got to give a shout-out on Twitter to John Becker, at John Becker underscore, who went into the rules of the all-star balloting and the way it works. If a player goes out and one of the top three players at that position have, according to the player voting, is still available, they have to be selected. So there's a lot of people wondering why J.J. Weatherholt or why somebody else wasn't selected. Evidently, Yvonne Herrera was a top three player vote at the DH position, and that's why he gets selected. So congratulations to Yvonne Herrera.
Well, I didn't know that either.
You know, because I had no clue.
The All-Star game thing is, I love the All-Star game, but it's also just bodies in, bodies out, people withdrawing, plug people in. The voting system is very convoluted. So yeah, I just like, okay, tell me what times the game start. I'm kind of like in that camp, you know? But I'm happy for him. Whenever the Cardinals are represented, I'm happy. I will say this though, and maybe I'm a bad person, but there are a lot of things I like a lot about Yvonne Herrera, and I think it's okay to talk about this, especially since he's now officially an all-star. But, you know, the last month or so, he has not done a lot. I mean, he really hasn't. And frankly, Matt, you know, and I'm pretty sure you and most people would agree with this, it's nothing profound. I look at a guy who's that big and that strong and hits the ball so hard, and as much as I love the walks and the hit by batters and the fact that he gets on base a lot, the dude is slugging 395 for the season. A guy that powerful, 395? Are you kidding me? Seriously. It's actually a sign of respect for him, because what I'm trying to say is I think there's a lot more there that he hasn't been able to summon yet. And it's kind of disappointing in that context. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I would agree. I mean, his numbers since June 1st, he's appeared in 35 games. He's a 220 hitter. I don't care about that. But his home run total is 4. I care about that. I want him to hit more home runs than 4 over 35 games. His OPS is 706. That's an average OPS. He should be inching towards 800. I think that's what he's got in him. I think that's the kind of hitter he is.
I mean, since Nathan Church came back, I think he's got a higher OPS, you know, or close to it.
Yeah.
And for whatever reason, and for whatever reason, man.
The podcast Campus Files is back with more stories of scandal, crime, and intrigue on college campuses.
It is not hard to destroy a college.
It's almost like a university under siege.
Listen to and follow Campus Files, available now wherever you get your podcasts.
You know, I looked this up a couple weeks ago. I'm going to have to update it over the weekend or something. You know, Yvonne Herrera, at the time I looked it up, it was like he had hit more ground balls than all but 4 or 5 players in the big leagues. This incredible volume of ground balls, ground balls, ground balls, ground balls. And the thing of it is, if you look at what his batting average is of ground balls, you know, it's better than you think, because he hits a ball hard, but he also hits into a lot of double plays. But the point is, he just can't get this launch angle thing going. He just can't.
Yeah.
And I know the people that hate this stuff will say, well, I don't care about that. I don't want to hear about no launch angle. Okay. So what you're saying is you're fine with him being like 5th in the majors and hitting ground balls. You're good with that then, huh? Rather than the ball going over the fence more often or going in the gaps for a double. So you're good. You're good with ground ball, ground ball, ground ball, double play, double play, double play. I'm not. But if you are, good for you.
Yeah, it's a great point on launch, because he is, and I guess the good news here is it's a single thing that's very fixable. Now it takes a lot of work. It's hard work, but it's not like you got this list of things that you got to get better. If he can start hitting the ball in the air more, all of a sudden he becomes that close to 800 OPS guy.
No doubt about it. And to your point, it is in this day and age, finding that launch angle. First of all, it's not all that complicated. I'm not saying you or I could do it, but when you have that kind of ability and all the talent, all the technology, good coaching, we're seeing players just all over the place transform themselves just by making that one adjustment, and it just puts them in an entirely new realm. I don't know why. I just don't know why he can't find that launch angle sweet spot. And for the people that don't like the term launch angle, here, just use the word uppercut. It's an uppercut. I mean, we don't need to use the fancy title. I agree. It's an uppercut. I don't know why he can't get under the ball. I don't know why he's on top of the ball when he hits it so much.
That's Bernie Miklas. I'm Matt Pauly. One last break. We'll come back and we'll try to put a bow on what just happened against the Brewers over the last 4 days. This is the Redbird Rush Hour on KMOX. All right, we got just a few minutes left, about 5 minutes to go, and then we're going to get on out of here. It is the Redbird Rush Hour alongside of Bernie Miklas. I'm Matt Pauly. Kevin Wheeler is going to be back coming up on Monday. Bernie, it was a tough few days for the Cardinals. They lose 4 of 5 to the Brewers. Some of the games were close. So some of the games, they were the proverbial, you know, one big hit away from winning, which just goes to prove the point that the Cardinals, when they don't give things away and when they play with that margin being so small and make the plays they need to, they can beat just about anybody. But at the same time, if you don't do that, you're going to have a rough weekend against teams like the Milwaukee Brewers.
Yeah, the Brewers are just very, very good. I got to be honest with you. I almost get a kick out of, all of a sudden there's the newspaper in town, and, you know, it's like it's just now they've discovered that the Brewers are good or something. It's like the Brewers thing in St. Louis is just so weird to me, because it's like I think we're all such snobs or something, because of all the Jim Edmonds and Rolands and all the Pujols and Molina, that it's like, well, yeah, they're the Brewers. The Brewers have been kicking your butt since 2018, and the Brewers are outstanding. And it's just like all of a sudden, it's like, well, you know, the Brewers are pretty good. Yeah, I know. I've been knowing that for a lot of years, actually. So I don't know. I think the Brewers are vastly superior to the Cardinals. I'm not surprised what happened. I mean, the 8-2 on the season so far, and they thrashed him in every single way. But aside from that, Matt, it's part of a problem. You know, the Cardinals' trends are not going well. The trends are going in the wrong direction. I mean, if you they have a losing record by one game since the end of April. Since May the 20th, they're 5 games under .500. If you go to June 17th, they are 8-13. They rank 13th in winning percentage in the National League. But I want to give it another thing, because we've talked about how they've been fortunate not when they're not playing all that well. They haven't lost any ground. Actually, they have lost a lot of ground.
Yeah,
because on June the 16th, when the Cardinals were 40-31, they had a healthy lead. In the wild card. I think the closest team to them in terms of the third wild card was like 2.5 games back. And if you look now, I'm going to mess that up. I figured this out today. The Cardinals, since June the 17th, they have lost 5.5 games in the standings, because they were up by 2.5. Now they're like 3 back, and that's a swing of 5.5 games, and that's in 22 days. So. Everyone, you know, God bless you, but don't say, well, you know, they really haven't lost any ground. Actually, they have, and they need to get this thing going. And as you know, Matt, the schedule coming out of the break is brutal, absolutely brutal.
It is, and we only have 1 minute left. The only thing I would say, and it's not a pushback to you, but it's just it's an add-on. A lot of that fallback is because the Miami Marlins became the best team in baseball since June 1st.
I agree.
They're not losing games. And so it seems like every time the Cardinals have lost a game, they've lost ground to the Marlins, who are now in that final wild card spot. And obviously the Phillies and Cubs, they're good teams. I really think the Cardinals are going to be in contention for that final wild card spot, whether it's the Phillies or Braves in that top spot, depending on who's in the first place in the East. But we'll see.
Bullpen's got to be a lot better. The ERA since that June 17th date that I've circled, it's over 5 runs a game. And then the other thing, Cardinals can't score enough runs at Busch Stadium. When they score 5 runs at Busch Stadium in a game this year, they're 15-2. When they score 4 runs or less, they're 9-23. And the problem is they don't score 5 runs at home enough. The ballpark's killing them.
Bernie, just think about it.
Thank you, brother. Thank you. Have a wonderful weekend.
That's Bernie Mikulas. I'm Matt Pauly. Cardinals baseball next on KMOX.
I'm Dana Carvey.
I'm David Spade.
Fly on the Wall's back for another season now on audio and video every Monday and Thursday.
So many incredible guests will be joining us.
Follow and listen to Fly on the Wall everywhere you get your podcasts.
Too good to be true.